welcome to If You've Come This Far. Sean and I are here for, episode number 58, 59, something in there. I have to confess, this is an old interview just because we've had a year, right? You and I both. So we're catching up on some things. So back in the spring, we interviewed Jeremy Smith, who Sean had found, and I'll let Sean introduce or say a few things about Jeremy.
That's it? That's your new intro?
Oh my God.
That's what you're going with? I thought, I just want you to know I'm going to do something, a little different, because we always stumble over our words. That's what you came up with.
The saddest thing to me is that the listeners can't see the look of disdain you just gave me.
Oh, come on. Really?
I feel like this is an abusive relationship at this point. Oh. Come on. Let's get it together.
I'm feeling bad together, about man. That. I'm feeling bad about
you don't
that.
Need to
that
feel
you're feeling abused.
That was funny. I feel fine. Talk about Jeremy
Smith. I think Jeremy is basic. We're basically going to publish Jeremy about 11 months ago from when I first sent him an email.
Right.
The listeners will hear. I read an article in the journal about parental leave, and a lot of the article was about how men are afraid to take parental leave because, it doesn't fit the model of what a man's supposed to be.
Yeah.
And Jeremy Smith was in the article and really cool. He had some interesting things to say. So I sent him a note and said, hey, Jeremy, can you come on and talk with us about, your perspective on this, being a young dad and working in this organization called Mindful Return. And he's awesome. I mean, I love this guy. I think, this is a really important conversation. And, I hope that the folks that listen to it will find it engaging and consider, and particularly the young people that listen to this, consider the importance of taking time and bonding with their kids and all the rest.
He leads this working dad course. And so there's part of it where he really wants to encourage the connection in the early part of children's lives between them and their dad, which is great. And we did talk a lot about just like corporate policy versus corporate expectations.
Yeah.
And then all this, like you said, this model, this sort of bullshit model that makes people, men in particular, think that they can't use it. They have it, but they can't use it, for crying out loud. Which is bogus, I think.
So. Yeah. Well, I just, I just want to say I call him a young dad because I'm an old dad. And so, it's hard to think that, let's see, 37, maybe?
I'm not sure. Like I'm not sure.
So I could be his dad. So that's,
that's fair. That's fair.
Which is hard for me to say, but it's the truth.
Yeah. And Jeremy had a big pitch right after our meeting, and he had a hard stop. So this is one of our shorter episodes, but it's really enjoyable. At least it was for me.
Yeah, me too. I really like this guy, and I hope people enjoy what we had to say.
All right, here we go, Jeremy Smith.
Jeremy.
Hey. Can you guys hear me?
We can hear you fine.
All right, cool.
Yeah. Can you believe it?
I literally have like a huge presentation at 12:30.
Yeah.
Major shit. Pitch.
Yeah.
And they moved it to Friday, and I was like, I am not canceling that call. So
Are you sure? Seriously, are you sure?
Yeah. No, I'm totally fine. That's why I really do have like a hard stop at at like 5 to 11:30, whatever.
So what are you pitching?
So I work for a small private lender. It's basically a credit card company. And we do some stuff in the co-brand space. So there's like an RFI out right now for everyone's, they're requesting people to come in and basically pitch them on why they should choose us to partner. So
This
is, it's making sense to me. Are you in Wilmington?
I am. Yep. Just south of Philly.
So how would you know that? How would you
know that? Because Wilmington's like credit card HQ.
The credit card hub of the world. There is no other place. Yeah. Everyone in the credit card industry works in Wilmington, Delaware. Wild.
Chris, you know so much like important stuff.
I know so much. I don't know much of anything, actually, to be honest. Jeremy, it's nice to meet you.
Yeah,
you too.
Wait, how did remind me how the two of you jokers crossed paths?
So, all right. So I read an article in the Journal in December and sent Jeremy a note saying, this is who we are. This is a great topic. We would love to have you on and have this conversation. I think we agreed to do it shortly thereafter. And here we are at the end of April, after multiple calendar adjustments, let's call it. Here having this conversation and psyched for it. So glad you committed to us. Thank you.
Yeah, for sure. I'm glad we persevered.
Yes. Thank you. So you have a mic, like a real microphone. So do you podcast?
I bought this because the course that I helped set up, we wanted to record some video and conversational stuff. So I don't podcast per se, but I've been a guest a couple times on a few, and I've been able to get my use out of my microphone here.
Yeah, but you do it for your training, that one of the things that we're going to talk about, right?
Yeah. There's some video content that we put up there, so I decided to invest in a decent rig.
Awesome. So the nature of the article in the Journal, the actual title was The Big Benefit at Work That Dads Are Afraid to Use. And it's all around parental leave. And, you know, the numbers are on what the numbers, the conditioning societally, I mean, all that seems to make sense. But one of the big things that I want to start with, cause I talk to my kids about this all the time. So my kids are, in their 20s, two of them in their late 20s, is that part of your compensation is your vacation. And, you know, that's part of your comp plan. And so one of the things in this article about parental leave is it's part of your comp. So Jeremy, we're going to talk about, you know, your role, your other role with Mindful Return. But maybe talk about all the dynamics around parental leave right now as you see it. Maybe talk a little bit about your involvement with Mindful Return and how you got there. You're actually featured in the article, and we'll have a link to it in the show notes. But let's start there if that works for you.
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, it's kind of a trip. I never thought I would be featured in the Wall Street Journal. I remember saying when the author reached out, he's very lucky because it routed to spam, and I assumed it was. You know, people don't usually reach out to me from the Wall Street Journal. So I guess I'll start at the beginning. I have two kids. My daughter is 9 and a half. My son is about to turn 7. So I have been an advocate in the paternity leave space for a couple of years now. But I've almost moved on to the next phase of my own personal experience. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't say almost. I certainly have. I'm coaching youth sports nonstop now.
Right.
So I took two separate paternity leaves. I worked for a large bank at the time of both. And during the first one, I had the same fears most dads have, that there's going to be some negative consequence to me taking the full benefit, like you said. Mm-hmm. And so I think I was offered 8 weeks. I took 5, which I realize many listeners are probably scoffing at how generous even that is, right? Mm-hmm. But it, coming off the back of that, you know, I really had an appreciation for what it represents and what it enables you to do as a father in terms of connecting for your child. I was able to be there for my wife during recovery, just a whole host of things. You know, there's statistics around how being involved early on translates to being involved 20 years later.
Right.
But I found it to be a really powerful experience, and I really enjoyed it. And I found it very meaningful. I also found that it was not detrimental to my career. Mm. So on the back of that, when we had our second, I decided to take the full thing, which had been extended at the time to 16 weeks, mm-hmm. which is extremely generous.
Wow.
Maybe not by European standards, but by American standards, that's yeah. pretty crazy. And this was back in 2017. So the institution that I work for had literally just expanded the policy. I decided to take it all. And because of that, I was one of the first people in my region to have done so. Uh-huh. Next thing you know, I am on internal panels. You know, they're kind of trying to push it a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, as a benefit, and to say, look, here's someone successful that did it, and, you know, go tell them why it's amazing and they should do it too. So I got a little bit of experience speaking about it and that sort of thing.
Can I stop you there for a second?
Yeah, of course.
So I'm curious about at the time in the bank, you know, I've seen it in my business career, Chris maybe has as well, where there's a policy and then there's the culture. Mm-hmm. And so I think it's really interesting they had you going around talking about trying to drum up business, if you will. Mm-hmm. But was the culture supportive of the policy? I mean, broadly, would you say at the time that you were doing this, whether the first time or the second time?
Totally mixed. I'd say
totally mixed.
It's completely mixed. I had a lot of people. I mean, I work in corporate finance. All right.
Yeah, right.
So this is not a super progressive industry. Yeah,
right.
So a lot of male colleagues came up to me and told me they thought it was kind of ridiculous. And, you know, when they had a child, they received 2 days and were back in the office and that's how it should be, et cetera, et cetera. And then I had roughly the same amount of people say, that's awesome. Thank you for doing that. You're normalizing it for the rest of us.
What about your bosses?
What's that? I'm sorry.
What about your bosses?
Bosses were supportive. I did receive support there. One thing I always bring up when I talk about this is there were, I know, difficult comp conversations that happened behind the scenes in terms of like that year's bonus, for example, mm-hmm. for me having basically not been there for a third of the year. So I will say at the managerial level, there was discussion, but I never received anything but outward support.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So on that front, it was, things are okay.
So I'm sorry. So I interrupt you as telling the story about you were going around doing panels and.
Yeah, no worries. So I began speaking on it and kind of getting more comfortable advocating, I suppose. So I decided to start a blog about it, as one does, because I'm a classic millennial, right? Uh-huh. And this was 2017. So I did that and wound up linking up with Lori, who runs Mindful Return. So Mindful Return is a third-party program that individuals can come to, but typically it's corporations, companies, law firms, et cetera, will partner with us, and they will, I guess, provide Mindful Return courses, groups, et cetera, as a benefit to their employees. Mm-hmm. And the reason it's so important that it's a third party is an employee can come to us and they can be totally honest and know that there is a wall between us and their employer,
yeah.
right? We are kind of a full stop counseling support dog, you know, learn course, module based structure. So it's been pretty wild. We've had hundreds of dads come through in the past few years. It continues to grow. You know, it's obviously not just me doing it. Mm-hmm. This is like, I help establish it and I'm now doing other things. It's pretty cool. We have like an alumni group that comes together and hops on calls every once in a while. And I think a lot of people have gotten a lot out of it.
I'm really intrigued. And I haven't done as much research as I should have. It's been a busy few weeks. But this Mindful Return thing, I'm sure it's not just about coaching folks to take to max out on their benefit, right? I'm sure there's much more to it than that. I want to get into that in a second. But before I do, I mean, the reason so many employers are increasing this particular benefit, I'm sure there's an equity component to it. But there must be a bottom line component too. They must see some statistic that says, look, this is better for us, not just better for Jeremy. Can you speak to that a little bit?
100%. It's all about employee retention. So believe it or not, the time around having a child is a time when a lot of people make a career transition. And this is like, you basically, you want to have a generous leave policy, if purely economics here, right? You want to have a generous leave policy as a talent attractive device, right? Like, it's a reason why top talent would come to your company. It's just a key benefit that a lot of younger people look for. And then the actual value of having that extended leave and providing these services and routing people through Mindful Return, for example, is to help retain them after the fact. And I shouldn't say just career changes. Some people leave the workforce entirely, right? So a lot of what we talk about is flexibility and open conversations and, you know, understanding what's changing and what's not, how to set expectations, all those sorts of things.
Well, because by the way, it turns out when you have a kid, whether it's your first, your second, or your third, or whatever, it's a huge change to life. I mean, I always get nervous. I'm like, shit, who knows where one comes out on the other side of this, right? They may, like you said, they might decide that working is not for them because they have this other vocation, which is to raise these kids. Anyway, I appreciate you clarifying that point.
But on the point of leave programs, I think the day this data from SHRM is in 2023, 40% of organizations had paid maternity and 32% had paid paternity. Do those numbers seem to track with you, Jeremy?
Can you repeat the populations there?
40% for maternity leave and 32% for paternity leave.
In the U.S.?
From SHRM. Paid? Yeah, in U.S.
Yeah, that seems about right. I mean, I think in the U.S., there's a big discrepancy in Europe, between Europe and the U.S., obviously, in terms of what's paid and what's not, and also in length of leave. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the tech companies, like I think Netflix came out several years ago now and said you can take up to a year.
Yeah.
That was how passionate they were about trying to keep people there.
Yeah.
You know, wow. Like, oh, look, you go get adjusted, you get settled, and when you're ready to come back, we're here.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's so industry dependent.
Yeah.
So industry dependent. Now, I'll be totally blunt. Like, for Mindful Return, a lot of people that come through it are in the legal field and the financial services field. Mm-hmm. That tends to be more standard. But look, I mean, there are a lot of jobs. If you work for a small business, the idea that you're going to go away for a year and get paid is insane. Right.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's very just situational.
So Chris, back to your question, I think you wanted to talk about the comp component of it, which again was one of the things that occurred to me, is the societal pressures of, you know, being a man and staying at work and that whole thing. I mean, what Jeremy talked about, it's like, well, you're, you know, guy, you don't stay home, and this compensation that's right there to just go do it. I mean, this is part of your comp. The conflict between those two is, I can appreciate the pressure, and I'm sure, Jeremy, the guys that come in for training are really struggling around that. Right.
Yeah. There's the internal conflict around long-term career impact is so huge. Yeah. Like, of all the concerns, that's the biggest one. It's just like, can I do this? What's going to happen? I'm worried that people are going to forget about me. I'm worried that people are going to see that they can get on fine without me, you know, all of these things. It's terrifying, right? And and at a time when, candidly, you cannot afford loss of income, you cannot afford to be displaced from the norm. You need stability during that time. So, you know, there's some pre-work. The dads who come through, you can come through whenever you want, right? Yeah. Some are pre-kid, some are during leave, some are after. And we have materials for everyone, but it's ideal if you can kind of like iron out a lot of these concerns, have the conversations. There's kind of a right way to go about it to make sure that things don't get too disrupted. So,
hey, listeners, if you enjoy our show, please consider following us or sharing the show with a friend. And I want to take a quick second to shout out our sponsor, Half Acre Beer Company, from their iconic Daisy Cutter Pale Ale to the refreshing Bodum IPA. All of the beers that these guys are making are a testament to quality and to their passion for brewing. So cheers to Half Acre Beer Company for supporting if you've come this far and for brewing great beers. And now let's get back to the show. I don't want to spend a whole lot of time on this piece, but what are the disincentives for employers to not let there be bad ramifications, right? Like, is there a lot of legal action saying, hey, I got treated poorly because I maxed out on my paternity leave, or I mean, it's not a very eloquent question, but you know what I mean?
You got me with a double negative there. So I think what we're saying is like, I'll answer the latter first. I am not aware of much legal ramification that's floating around paternity leave or compensation or those sorts of things. I don't think it's something that people are too comfortable stepping up to the plate for unless they feel really, really done wrong. But for the record, people step up to the plate.
People step up to the plate for some pretty crazy stuff. So
yeah, that's fair. Yeah. But no, on that front, I'm not familiar with too much. I think most of what it comes down to is just economics. I think it's just a matter of, can a company afford to pay people to take leave? Can they afford to, even if they're not paying them, can they afford for someone to go away?
Yeah.
Like, they have to still provide whatever service they're providing, right?
Because you get your leave and your vacation.
Yeah, on top too, of
right?
PTO, right?
It's on top of, right?
Yeah, yeah, typically.
Yeah.
Some companies will require you to eat into your vacation, and then you can extend on top of it.
Okay.
I should say that one really, really cool thing that's starting to happen, and it's very, very common now, is there's no requirement on when you take your leave, and that a lot of companies will allow you to split your leave.
Right.
So this is huge from a childcare angle.
Right? Yeah, right.
Huge, huge. So the ability to take a week at the beginning, right when it happens, maybe there's some recovery aspect, et cetera. You can kind of normally get stable. And then, you know, maybe your spouse is home or your partner is home with the child for a certain period of time. And then you can come back and take the second part of your leave on the back end. Mm-hmm. Now you've extended that window where you, A, don't need childcare, and B, can spend the time with your kid.
Yeah, sure, sure.
But it's pretty cool.
Let me take one more crack at the question I was trying to answer and failed to.
The double negative about question?
I fucking love a good double negative.
of course you do.
Of course. So you talked about, you weren't sure how it was going to maybe affect your bonus, and that there was some conversation among managers about that. So I guess my question is, how does an employer alleviate a prospective dad or mom's decision around how much leave to take? And is it via policy? Like, how do we assure people that, look, you can do this and there's no downside?
Yeah, that fantastic question. So it's policy and clear communication, right? Like, if it would have been very beneficial, and it was during my second leave when that particular conversation hit around bonus, it would have been very beneficial if the company had a stance on that, mm-hmm. of like a prorated, but there was no stance.
Right.
So there were obviously going to be different opinions on it.
Right.
So it's having a policy clearly written up, and, you know, for anyone who runs a small business out there, there's plenty of consultants and lawyers that would be more than happy to help you out with that. Uh-huh. But having that policy and then communicating it, and look, things get normalized over time, right? You can't normalize something just by putting a piece of paper out.
Right.
So it does take time, and in larger enterprises, that's probably a little bit easier just because you're going to have more sample size.
Can you share, part of me is thinking, okay, I maybe as an old guy, I understand maternity leave, right? I mean, the woman, actually has some recovery time and spending time with the baby and breastfeeding, at least in a heterosexual relationship. Kind of the conversation with your wife around you taking leave and the same with the men that come to your training. And what's the dialogue between the significant other and the man who is dealing with how they leave and how much they leave and their confusion over it all? Can you talk about that inner exchange and what you hear about it? Yeah.
Yeah. I think probably even more importantly than the actual dialogue with the spouse is that one of the other big fears and levels of confusion of the dads that I talk to, it's like, what am I going to do? Like, when you're on leave, like, what do you do all day? Right.
It's a fair question.
It's a totally fair question.
Especially when you're having your first kid, right? Because then you're totally clueless.
Yeah. I was just going to say, first kid and second kid, totally different. Second kid makes, yeah. You know what you're doing all day. Right. Let's be honest.
A little bit. Right.
So my standard joke to this is that many bathroom has been renovated on a paternity leave. And that's a huge mistake. That's a huge mistake, in my opinion, because the time is there for you to bond, for you to support. For you, like, I think it was George Clooney. He got so much praise for this, but he said, when my wife gets up to breastfeed at 3 a.m., I just get up with her and rub her back. You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah.
And it's that thing of like, look, there's a certain level of solidarity to it. And there's a reason postpartum depression is a real thing, right? Mm-hmm, a lot of women suffer for that. It's kind of an unspoken problem for a lot of people. And being there in that level of support is something that doesn't get enough attention.
Yeah.
You know, I think also, you know, I mentioned it earlier, but the fact that a dad who is involved early stays involved years down the road is so huge. So huge. And part of that is because when a mother has a baby, she's kind of been bonding and been changed by it for 9 months. Dads haven't at all.
Right.
It's all very theoretical and conceptual. Yeah. So that time is part of when a dad will bond with the child. If that helps.
I wanted to ask you because you have so much exposure to men who are going through this, what most dads get wrong. And it sounds like the bathroom renovation is what most dads get wrong. Even when they do max out on their benefit from their employer, they don't use it wisely.
Yeah, it's this is where I think the problem, and it's probably more of a problem in society in general, is that we're not present enough, right? We're always either thinking about what happened, thinking about the future, planning.
Yeah.
Mindful
this
return.
This is a perfect right. opportunity to just be there with your family. Just right. be in the moment, live it, experience it, calm yourself down. Things are changing, right? And so that's one of the things that we coach quite a bit, is just how to be present and really optimize that time with your family.
Yeah. You talk about bonding with a child too, but I mean, whether it's the first child or the second child, you're creating a different relationship with your partner mm-hmm. too. I mean, and so it's not, you're getting to learn what it means to be parents for, you know, whether it's your first child or now a second child. And so I'm sure you and your wife, as you've gone through that, and I can just imagine a partner when the man says, well, you know what? I think I'm going to take 2 of my 16 weeks. Being like, oh. What are you kidding me? What is wrong with, right? What is wrong with you?
Yeah.
Is that right?
Oh, spot on. Yeah. Spot on. Yeah.
So your first time when you didn't take the whole thing, was that a difficult conversation?
I don't know if it was difficult.
Yeah.
I think there was just so much confusion around it.
Yeah.
You know, I had never thought about paternity leave.
Right.
You know what I mean? My wife hadn't either. We're just, you know, it was sort of an afterthought, and it was more about like, oh, well, grandparents can help and this person can come over and that kind of thing. And for me to be there was way more important than I had ever thought it could or would be. You know, and I took it pretty seriously, way more seriously my second time, where I think one of the classic mistakes is people aren't setting expectations clearly when they leave the office to go on paternity leave. So it's look, I can be available. I understand I'm important to this organization. I'll be available to you for this hour window for calls, emails, whatever, every day.
Yeah.
But outside of that, don't call me. Like right. I'm not here. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And you wouldn't believe how many problems are self-solved when you put that rule in place.
By the way, the thought that I had in my head, Chris, and I don't know if you had it, is, man, I mean, so Katie's 29 years old. So if, you know, back in the day, I don't know what I would have done. I mean, because I don't know. I'm sure I would have been more, Lisa and I would have been having a discussion of, what do you mean you're not taking your whole leave? Because that was my mindset, I think. For you, Chris?
I don't really know. I like to think that I was a little more advanced.
Thanks.
That's the wrong adjective. I like to think that, well, first of all, I never went into this whole parenting thing thinking I'm going to have 4 or 5 kids. Yeah. So I knew it was always going to be like two max. And so I'm like, let's take advantage of this. And I did work for a really good employer for both the, for one of the kids, Morningstar, which was great about that stuff. But I don't remember. Well, the other thing is, when you go back to our parents, like Jeremy, I'm not sure, obviously when you were, you don't have any memories from when you were one or less than one about whether or not your dad took leave, but do you know if your parents, like what their situation was?
I'll do you one worse. Not only did he not take leave, I'm pretty sure he was in night school for his grad degree. So.
No way. Yeah. Oh my God.
Yeah. He was pretty busy for the first few years of my life.
Yeah.
Well, what he didn't tell you, he was also renovating the bathroom. So,
so I want to get to this point because, a couple of weeks after the article that included you was an article about reboarding. And this involved a lot of conversation with the employer between the person that's taking leave and having that plan that lays out, okay, what's happening. And for some of the companies they talked about, it happens before you even leave, while you're on leave, and then when you return. The thing that I found interesting is that, you know, like you in the article about parental leave, every example they gave of reboarding was the female. And so it occurred to me that, you know, conditionally there's still, and I get it, right? But conditionally it still reinforces the fact that it's the mom that takes the leave. Thoughts about that, Jeremy?
Yeah. I mean, it's look, like that is not the way the world works now at all. I mean, you want to talk about who's doing daycare drop off. I guarantee you there's a lot of dads in that line, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think it just comes down to flexibility. So the reboarding thing, we have a couple of modules towards the end of what we provide where we talk specifically about flexibility and understanding, like, look, there are going to be days where you're going to get called out for no reason. Well, not no reason, unexpectedly, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To go pick up a sick kid, to go do something, to cover for something. There's just a lot. I mean, Lord, you go to the doctor 100 times, it feels like, in that first year. And so how to not let that stress you out and how to handle that, you know, in a professional and correct way for your family too.
Yeah.
So it's funny. I had a conversation. His name escapes me at the moment, but he's a professor at Johns Hopkins, and he reached out to me for a book he's writing on how to promote, equality for women in the workplace. I said, look at this, two dudes sitting here talking like, what are we doing here? We think about this.
We do have to be part of the conversation though, don't we?
Yeah.
Don't men have to be part of the conversation? Yeah.
Exactly. So during our conversation, it kind of comes around to that. And it's that idea that like, look, the more dads do at home, the more equity there is there and equality there is there, the better it'll be in the workplace, the better it'll be everywhere. So it's really, really important.
Couldn't agree more.
I got to go back to something. You know, we joked about your dad doing his graduate degree after you were born, and we talked about all of us, three of us, agreeing that we're striving to be more present in life. So you've got a day job. You work at this nonprofit. I assume it's a nonprofit.
It is not technically a nonprofit. No.
Okay. But either way, you've got that's like a second job. I don't know how much you spend, and you coach like 17 different youth sports teams. Like, how are you doing on being present? And like, what are you trying to do better?
I'm horrific at it. I'll be totally honest. I will say one thing I did this year. I stopped drinking coffee in December.
Oh, cheers.
Same.
I didn't drink coffee until I probably hit my mid-20s. And then I really started ramping up. And come to find out, I'm just not sure I need it at this point in my life. Like, I have enough going on. Like, I get up and go kind of on my own. And I found it was kind of like hyping me up too much, you know, elevated heart rate, that kind of thing, which, you know, everyone's saying is healthy. I'm not convinced that's not just big coffee talking. But yeah, I mean, look, there's things that it's just funny. Like, literally quitting coffee made me a better dad. I'm not as quick tempered with my kids, which at 9 and 7 is, you know.
Yeah, seriously.
That's good. Very
But one thing I noticed that I've been talking about recently is the idea of like switching time. So during COVID, we had just moved back to Delaware from Austin, and it was a very stressful time. Then COVID hit. It was just chaos. No one knew what was happening. And we were all at home all day. My daughter was on virtual kindergarten, which went exactly how you would expect. And so I would get done a new job. I would close down my computer and I would walk out my door and my kids would be in my face, just ready to go, dad time, blah, blah, blah. And I couldn't handle it. Like, and I realized the value of my commute. I'd always complained about my commute, but the value of a commute is that you have switching time. You can put down the work you can pick up the dad you. And without that, I really struggled. So now even on the days like today where I'm working from home, I will take 10 minutes after my day. I'll sit here, I'll read a magazine, I'll listen to some music or a podcast or whatever it may be, and kind of get back in the mode. And then when I leave, I'm ready to go play Legos.
Mm-hmm. So can we talk a little bit about your moonlighting as a coach? Tell us about your clientele. Is it all dads? Is it dads who are fixing to have kids? Is it dads who have had kids and are trying to figure out how to make the most of it?
Just to piggyback on that, Chris, and a little bit about the course too, Jeremy, in there. Yeah.
So it's all dads or prospective dads. I mean, typically people who are either just on the precipice of going out on leave or having a kid. And like I said, sometimes those who are already in that stage. So the way the course is run, it's basically one every 2 months. It's a 4-week course. And the course is fairly structured. Like there's a drip each day of a module. It's kind of like something to think about. There's maybe a conversational video of me talking to someone, sort of like a 30, 45 minute kind of mini podcast, you could say. And then some written materials and an opportunity for dads to connect with each other about that topic. So there's one of those each day, and we talk about a host of different things. There's a big section on paternity leave if that applies to you up front. Then we talk about things around the actual birth. Then we talk about things like getting support from family, how to deal with challenges, how to level set expectations at work, how to return to work effectively, what you can gain from being a dad that you can bring to the office, a host of things. So on top of that, we typically have a call one evening a week during the course, which I'll host sometimes, or one of our other guys will host. And then we have alumni calls. So we'll bring people back, which I'll tell you the exact correct number of people to have on a call if you're ever curious.
Oh, sure.
It is 8 people is the perfect number of people to have on a Zoom call.
And how did you conclude that?
Because you can go around the horn, but it's not so many that people just tune out and feel totally lost. And it's like, all right, I guess I can come back in 45 minutes.
Yeah. That sounds right.
So eight is the right number. There's never any silence and you can get through everybody.
All right.
But yeah, that's how the courses come together. Like I said, I'm sort of a bolt onto it. So Lori, who founded the course, set it up for moms. It was a passion of hers. She's turned it into just something really amazing. Tons of corporate clients that sort of offer it again as a benefit. But what she found immediately was that there are not many corporate clients that will bring you on unless you offer a dad side, which I think is fair. So that's how she pulled me in. And I was happy to do it. It's been really rewarding for me too, honestly. It makes me think a lot more about what it means to be a father.
So do you actually limit the cohorts to 8? Do you actually do that?
No.
Since it's optimal? No, we don't. It's optimal, but we don't.
No, I will say that because we're hosting calls fairly frequently, you know, and some people prefer not to come, busy schedules, et cetera, it's never too crowded.
Jeremy, okay. what's the course cost?
It depends how you come through. For most people, it's provided by their employer. Yeah. But I think if you were to walk up to the window, it would be $400.
Okay. We recently interviewed a great guy named Gary Barker, who runs an organization called Equimundo, which is a global organization. I don't want you to leave this call thinking that I did no research. I was on your website. I did notice that there are sort of office leaders in many different parts of the world, different continents. Do you all see any difference in the data around sort of the cultures and the inclination to take paternity leave in, say, India versus the US, South America versus Africa, et cetera?
There definitely are. So it was obviously started in the US. So like my dad course is the one that the others are modeled after, but mm-hmm. they've been adjusted to better reflect norms and policies. Like sometimes there's national policies, right, around leave. Mm-hmm. So it's a totally different ballgame. I must admit that I don't stay as connected, honestly, because there are so many differences. And once it's sort of been established, you know, we come together now and again, but not typically to discuss the stats.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. Chris is disappointed to hear that.
I know. He did all that research.
Well, he's all about the stats. he's all about the data.
No, I'm mostly just fascinated with like global differences in cultures around masculinity and everything for that matter.
No, that's fair. I mean, look, like, let's be honest. In Europe, our paternity leaves are a joke. I mean, it's not even close and has been for 20 years. I mean,
so let's talk about that. So what are your impressions on where this needs to go, what the status of things are? I mean, we talked about, 40%, according to Sherm, 40% of the companies have maternity, 32 have paternity. What's your opinion on where this needs to go?
Yeah. I mean, I think a lot of things could benefit from more thought around, I think how to frame this. I think there's an economic benefit to paternity leave that a lot of companies don't consider. And I think if we can reframe and help people understand that there is a bottom line benefit to this, I think that's how you drive the result. I don't think we're going to drive change by saying, look how great it is for dads.
Yeah.
There are a lot of people who that resonates with. It resonates with me a lot. It is not going to resonate with half of the people in this country. It just won't. So, and look, like a lot of people are choosing not to have kids now.
Right.
If there's no bottom line impact, like they probably couldn't care less. So I think if we can better frame the benefit economically, it'll go a long way towards advocating for it on its own. Mm-hmm. You just don't see much about it.
To Chris's point about data, then the data that you've seen, what does it show? I mean, is there
the retention? The retention factor is huge. I would fumble the statistic, Chris. I'm sure you saw it on our website, but the retention aspect is why companies typically come to us.
Yeah.
Because they see that benefit. Now, that's not to say that's why they offer the leave necessarily. But a lot of the reason they come to us is because we help them retain people.
Yeah. Yeah. Because the cost of a new hire is goofy.
Yeah. And then you think 16 weeks leave is bad, trying to on ramp for someone,
Right.
It's
right. Yep.
I have two idiosyncratic questions here. One is, have you ever heard of an employer with a policy that would pay out paternity or maternity leave unused?
I have not. In the same way they would for vacation, you mean?
Yeah, yeah.
Interesting.
No, I'm not aware of any.
It would be a bad incentive if they did, for one thing. So I'm kind of glad to hear that. My next question is, what have you seen out there in terms of paternity leave policies for families with two dads?
Everything that I've seen and everyone who's come through the course, it's been identical. Like a lot of companies, I know even back when I took my first one, it was gender neutral. Mm-hmm. I think one thing that you haven't seen, or I'm not seeing very frequently, are that the maternity and paternity leave benefits are identical. I don't know if that's what you're driving at. So there's no need for there to be a mother and a father, but that the mother leave is typically longer, and paid longer.
Okay.
So, Chris, they actually feature in the journal article a man, him and his partner had a baby, and he had paternity leave.
Okay. Yeah. See, now I look bad again.
I'm just reminding you of that for the listeners that I'm the workhorse and you're the smart one. We each have to have our role. That's all.
Oh, this guy, Jeremy, like, how do I do every week?
We each have to have our role. I got it. It's fine. It's good.
This is all super interesting. What kind of feedback do you get from the men who take your class?
It's interesting. There are some who receive so much benefit from it. They come back, they come to the alumni groups. I've had some asked to come on calls during the course just to provide insight and be there as a support mm-hmm. person. So like some people just really, really latch onto it. Sometimes it's crickets, right? Like they got provided to them as a benefit. They're not really interested. So, you know, it is what it is. So it really just depends on the individual, but I will say like, I personally have formed some powerful relationships through this mm-hmm. of just people, you know, you really get to know them, you know, about their kids, they come back, they tell you about what they're doing. So it's pretty neat in that way. You know, it's listed as sort of a course, but it's more than that.
Mm-hmm.
I think I want to be really sensitive to your time. I mean, we usually go I want to give you some extra time.
Sure.
Actually. And I'm interested in following up with you to talk about maybe some things we might be able to do together. Beyond conversation. But Chris has three canned questions that he asks at the end of every episode. And so are you comfortable with him asking you those questions?
I don't know. I'm a little nervous now.
Yeah, you should. It's no big deal.
Well, we'll see
all
how
right,
you do.
Chris.
You know, how you answer these depends on whether or not we publish this episode. I'm just kidding.
Jeez.
I'm kidding.
Is there math?
There's no math. Okay, Jeremy, what do you wish you could have told your 10-year-old self?
Ooh.
I'm a huge fan of Naval Ravikant. I don't know if you know who he is. There's a fantastic book I'll recommend. It's called the Almanac of Naval Ravikant, and it's basically just an assembled grouping of his thoughts. I don't even think he wrote it, but I'll mess up the quote, but what he's trying to get across is don't pretend to be someone other than yourself. Mm. It'll get exposed eventually. You'll wind up wasting your time. Just be yourself. You're unique in the world. That's going to drive you. That's going to get you where you need to go. Just be honest with yourself and with other people.
Mm.
That's awesome.
Sean,
how do you spell that? How do you spell that name?
I believe his first name is Naval, and then Ravikant is Ravikant, I think.
And I never even heard of him. All right,
and the word almanac is spelled with a K at the end.
Oh, okay. Oh, you're not joking. So yeah, we said there'd be no math, but there will be a spelling bee.
See what he did? He knew you probably knew how to spell almanac, but he was doing that for me.
No.
Oh, the workhorse.
I think it has a C on the end.
It does. Usually, the real almanac does have a C. So I thought you were joking.
So I'm saying the book.
But
really, just an amazing book. It's very short. You should check it out for sure.
Sean, it reminds me of Father Heim's teaching or what he says about the most important quality you have being integrity, which is to be your true self. So I love that. All right, Jeremy, question number two. Do you have a mantra in life or a mantra these days?
Honestly, mine right now is just to calm the hell down.
Mm-hmm.
Like I get so ratcheted up and worried and concerned. I'm a planner. Like I've been saving retirement since I opened a lemonade stand.
My God, you are high strung. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm a very, very anxious guy. And so these days I'm just trying to get myself to chill out a little bit. I think a lot of that comes from being a dad too, because I don't want my kids to see me and think that's a healthy way to go through life.
Yeah.
For sure.
That's great.
Versus model. The do as I say, not as I do kind of thing, right?
Yeah.
Can we drill down just a little bit in this? Like, back to your family situation. Are you an only child? One of how many
I'm
kids?
One of two. I have an older sister who's 16 months older than me and lives about an hour away, which is kind of nice.
Hmm.
So why do you think and would you describe yourself as high strung, or is it type A, or what's behind this?
I think it's just high strung. I don't know that I'm a type A.
What are you, therapist?
Yeah, I was going to say, no, I'm an Aries.
I'm trying to get to know Jeremy. I like Jeremy a lot.
Me too. Right. Yeah. And I'm kind of surprised that you would say that, because I'm not getting that vibe from you at all, Jeremy. Yeah,
it's so funny. I'll present later today, and everyone will tell me afterwards, oh, you're so calm. Like, you're so relaxed in the situation. I'm like, if you only knew, like, my week has been hell on earth.
Yeah. And first of all, my takeaway, and those are not accusations, they were questions. And my takeaway is not based on the vibe I'm getting from you. It's sort of based on some of the things you've described to us. So,
For sure. I mean, I don't know where it comes from. I mean, my parents always put a big emphasis on school and results as a kid. So I think there's maybe a little bit of that. And, you know, what I think that speaks to is, like, I think my parents, God bless them, they thought that was the best way to get the result they wanted, irrespective of the child.
Yeah.
And I think that was the right way for my sister. And I think it was the dead wrong way for me.
Interesting.
I did not need that. I was going to go there anyway. And to layer that on, I think, did me a little bit of a disservice.
That's a great point.
That's the juice right there.
Yeah. Right. You can't parent them the same way.
No. And who was I listening to? I'm a huge curator of content. Scott Galloway. And he was talking about how with kids, a lot of times they come out a little bit baked, and you're not an engineer, you're a shepherd.
Yeah.
Which I thought was great, because it's like that is true. You don't get to create your kid the way you want them to be. They kind of are who they are, and your job is to understand that and try to lead them in the right direction.
Sean, does Jeremy, in your conversations, the two of you so far, has he put together our connection with Todd and Kathy and Zen Parenting?
I don't know. I don't think we talked. Jeremy and I just had a quick convo. Okay. Say hi. Yeah.
Yeah.
So no, well, more to come.
Yeah, more to come for sure. But the founder of our men's group, he and his wife run this thing called Zen Parenting Radio. And the only reason I bring it up is because, like, we're talking about maternity leave and having kids and the first year of life, but then there's this long thing that happens where we have to parent these people.
Right.
Yeah. It's so fucking hard. And there's no playbook, the single playbook. Right. So anyway,
I'll tell you what, I'm in like year 10 of that grind. And like, I'm so tired. You know what I mean? And I think this is where a lot of people probably slip up a little bit, and you kind of fold a little and you give in a little more, and there's more TV time and that kind of stuff. Like, you get so darn worn out.
I can vouch and say, though, that it, I mean, it's pretty nice. I mean, if things go well, it can be pretty nice on the back end. Yeah. I mean, my kids are older.
And you guys were just getting into it. And Sean, there's going to be times where you're like, I don't know if this is going to end well.
Oh, right? Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Well, and those are the things. And so unlike you guys, I have at least with Chris's kids, 10 years more. And yeah, you're at that moment in time. You're like, holy shit, which way is this going to go? And in that moment, you're projecting and all the rest. And the reality is that, you know, things turn out kind of the way they're going to turn out.
And that I aspire that I don't experience it as a grind.
Right.
Right. Yeah. I want to be present and appreciate it. Like, when my 15-year-old wants to play guitar, I'm too often saying I can't now because I'm working. Okay. Right. So all right, last question, because I know you got a hop.
Yeah,
go ahead, Sean.
No, go.
Okay. Yep. Jeremy, what do you hope people will say about you at your wake?
Oh. Man, these are good. Oh man, I honestly hope they can't stop crying to get a word out, you know? I hope they see me as someone who made them smile and brought joy. More than anything I produced, that's tangible. I just want to be seen as someone who was fun to be around and maybe help take away some of the strain of life.
That's beautiful. I don't want to taint it, but it'd be like, oh, he was a calm motherfucker.
He was so cool.
So chill. Didn't you feel chill when you were around him? Oh, yeah.
That's great. If only.
Yeah. Well, yeah. You got some time. So
works in progress, right?
Yeah.
Amen. Can I make one more book recommendation?
Sure.
Please, yeah.
Yes.
I'm a huge fan of Ryan Holiday. I don't know if you're familiar with him. But he wrote a book called The Daily Dad, and it sort of takes some ancient philosophy from like Epictetus and Marcus Aurelius, et cetera, and he turns it into kind of like a parenting thing. Mm-hmm. It's literally half a page every day, and there's one for every day of the year. So you can kind of like, I use that. I mentioned earlier about kind of like level setting.
Yeah.
Before I go interact with my kids and you know, sort of flipping over to dad mode. And that book has really helped me to do that. So if anyone out there just needs some small little thing to sort of ruminate on for 5 minutes a day, it's pretty cool. And again, The Daily Dad by Ryan Holiday.
Good stuff.
We'll put that in notes too. You know, this is taking a long time to get together. It's been worth it. Incredibly been a pleasure to hang out with you. So thank you for sticking with us. Really much appreciated.
For sure. Thank you guys.
Yeah. Yeah. And good luck with your, yep. Go get them. Go get
them. Fingers crossed, huh?
All right.
I recommend a big cup of coffee right before you go over there.
That's a great idea.
Jeremy, I'm going to follow up with you. Soon, okay?
Yeah, please do.
All right.
I'd love to catch up again.
Sounds great. Peace.
Thanks, Jeremy.
Thanks again.
This is Chris. Thanks again for joining us on this episode of If You've Come This Far.
And this is Sean. Remember to check us out, mnliving.org.